Hi, welcome to the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast for January 16th, 2012. My name is Beth Below, and I'm founder of the Introvert Entrepreneur. The Introvert Entrepreneur is a professional and a personal development company that provides services for introverts and those who live, work, and play with them. Our goal is to create empowered, productive environments where introverts can flourish. The key to that is understanding and appreciating what it means to be an innie in an outie world. Professional services are designed for entrepreneurs, corporations and organizations, and individuals who want to focus on their personal development. You can find information and inspiration through my regular blogs, podcasts, and through the Facebook community. You can learn more at www.theintrovertentrepreneur.com. There's a marvelous quote by Martha Graham, very simple in its truth. She says, "The body never lies." Over the years, I've noticed that one of the ways my introversion shows itself most strongly is that I live in my head. My world consists primarily of my thoughts and feelings, and secondarily, how my body is physically showing up. That means that I can sometimes ignore what my body is telling me, which of course can lead to all sorts of trouble. The trouble is usually around my energy management, or lack thereof. Introverts are especially aware of their energy since it's a valuable currency that's frequently expended in the normal business of living in a highly social world. So it's critical that we take care of ourselves and our energy so that we can be productive and successful. If our body never lies, then we need to be sure we're listening to it carefully. This podcast interview focuses on exactly that. Catherine Hunter is an introvert and an artist who, upon realizing the small size of the box she had created for her life, began chronicling the trials, successes, and failures of stretching her comfort zone. And as you and I both know, stretching your comfort zone requires a lot of energy. So now Catherine works with shy, introverted, highly sensitive people to slowly stretch their own comfort zones. Hi, Catherine. Thank you so much for joining me for this podcast conversation.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, I want to first get some backstory on your business name, The Social Caterpillar. Where did that come from and what does it mean?
It started out because I was looking for a domain name. And if you've ever tried to buy a domain, most of the really simple ones are taken. And at the same time, I wanted it to be a little bit creative, and so I was kind of looking for a metaphor. And one of the things you think about when you think about social people are social butterflies. And I really liked the symbolism of the slow progression of the caterpillar kind of inching its way along a twig, and also the safety of a chrysalis for personal development, and then there's also being hidden under a leaf. So it worked from several angles there, and it happened to be available. So it all just kind of came together.
Yeah, I always say in those kinds of cases, it's like it was out there waiting for you.
Yeah.
And you just met each other. That's great. That's a great story. And for some reason, I hadn't thought about the juxtaposition with the social butterfly. So I'm so glad I asked that question. That's great. And maybe tell us a little bit, I shared a little in the intro, but tell us a little bit about the social caterpillar.
So mostly what it is, I'm pushing at and stretching my comfort zone. And I kind of tell that story because what I've gotten a lot from people is because we're introverts, we tend to live more inside our heads, and so we don't necessarily share as much as the extroverts do. And so when I share, a lot of what I hear is people saying, wait, you do that too? It's not just me. And so I think it's kind of a shift in perspective for them. And also the more I share, the more likely I am to go do something. And so it kind of balances on both ends of that.
Yeah, I love those moments when somebody, where either I feel it or somebody responds, oh, you mean it's not just me? Because we do mm-hmm. carry so much in our heads.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as you, I think part of what contributes to sometimes that energy drain that we might feel is because we're living this really rich life in our heads. And as introverts, and you know, for everybody, but for introverts especially, energy is a really precious asset. And I know that that's one of the topics that you like to talk about. So I wondered if you could share with us, where do you see people giving away their energy unnecessarily, and maybe specifically introverts, but people in general as well?
We lose energy in all kinds of ways, and some of them we really don't even think about. I know I'm not a particularly organized person, and I used to let it get to the point where there wasn't a room in the house that I could stand in and be comfortable. And then that's when I would go through and straighten everything up, and then that level would drop. Because what's going on is every time you're in a room with clutter, or even just knowing that it's there, it's kind of shouting at you in the background. And so it's pulling your attention and draining your energy just by the fact that it exists. And so I was actually kind of lucky when I finished my trip. I came in and I got a new apartment, and I had pretty much no stuff, which isn't something you usually find in, you know, an adult in her 30s. And so I was able to come at it from that perspective and bring everything into my house intentionally. So I don't have a lot of excess stuff, and it's also really easy to walk through and do like a 10-minute cleanup at the end of the day. And I can start the day with so much more energy because everything's fresh and ready, and it's not shouting at me.
My office is screaming at me at the moment. So I understand completely what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a trip. Sounds like you had a big, it sounds like it might have even been life-changing if you came back with, you know, not much in the way of material possessions.
Well, I'm very lucky in that I can do all of my work from anywhere that has an internet connection. And last April, I decided to take a road trip, and I drove to New York, stayed for a few days, and drove back. I was starting from Dallas at the time. And I did that over about 2 weeks, and I was able to work the entire time I was gone. And that was really when I realized that I didn't need to stay in Dallas. And I'd always said that I wanted to travel, and I had an absolutely perfect opportunity for it that I was really just kind of letting sit there. So I sold everything, and I took buses through Mexico and Central America, and then I flew to Brazil. And I did that over about between 8 and 9 months.
That's amazing.
It really was.
That is amazing. What do you think is the biggest thing that you learned from that experience about yourself?
I can pretty much do anything.
Yeah, if you can do that, you can do anything.
You know, I walked into situations where I speak fluent Spanish, but I don't speak any Portuguese. And so I was in Brazil for 6 weeks, mostly kind of pointing and hoping that people understood enough of my Spanish that they could figure out what I wanted. And then I capped off the trip, although I didn't realize it at the time, but I spent the morning of my 34th birthday riding a float in the Carnival parade in Rio.
Wow.
And it was really just, for me, it was, if I could do that, then there really wasn't anything that I couldn't face.
Well, and it strikes me, you know, would your 33-year-old self have ever predicted that's what you would be doing on your 34th birthday?
No.
No. Not in a million years.
that was even a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Well, congratulations. You know, you made a leap that a lot of people might even, you know, think about, dream about, fantasize about, and you actually did it and lived to tell the tale. So,
yeah,
thanks for sharing that with us. It just piqued my curiosity, so I had to ask. So you were talking about, you know, not being organized in that clutter, and, you know, sometimes we might not have the benefit of that kind of life-changing experience to clear the decks, but that doesn't mean that we can't do that, that it's not within our realm of choice at any time, really.
Well, and it's also one of those things that you don't have to start in one fell swoop. You can start really small. You know, you just put a cardboard box by the door, and as you notice things that you don't use regularly, you put them in there. If they live in there for a month and you still don't need them, it's probably time to evaluate whether or not they really need to live with you.
So anything else that you see people giving away their energy unnecessarily?
There are several things. I'll give you a short list here, and then we can talk about a couple of them. Worry, lack of movement, and a couple things that people probably deal with on a daily basis and don't even notice, like dehydration and non-restful sleep. And those are all things you can actually do something about once you're aware of it.
So tell us a little bit more about the worry. What happens?
Well, it's another one of those things that pulls at you and stresses at you, but worry, by definition, is actually passive. You know, you're not doing anything about it. You're just kind of fussing. And so if it's not something you can act on, then, and this is incredibly, well, it's one of those things that's simple but not easy, is the practice of letting that go. Because it's incredibly difficult because you're not used to it, but it's simple in that that's really all there is to it. And also the not getting caught up in beating up on yourself for worrying, because then that just ends up making it worse.
I think some people confuse worrying and thinking about it or problem solving, and they think that somehow it's productive when really it's just draining them and not necessarily moving them forward. It's actually kind of a way to keep from moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. So what about that moving forward? You mentioned lack of movement.
One of the things, I don't know, I tend to get super focused on whatever I'm doing, especially if it's something that I'm having a hard time with and I just want to push through it. But usually when you're at that point where you just kind of feel like, if I can just sit here for another 30 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever and get it done, that's usually the point where you need to stand up and go for a walk or stretch and do kind of a mental reset. And you'll actually get through whatever it is faster because you've given yourself that energy boost.
So I'm hearing like lack of movement can lead to lack of movement in different...
Basically, yes.
Yeah, excellent. And see, my default is to take a quick nap. And sometimes I think I'd probably be better off, you know, getting out, moving, stretching, walking around the block. And, mm-hmm. Oh, the couch is so seductive, I have to say.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, so I appreciate that. I appreciate that reminder about how energy can come from movement, you know, absolutely, and that it can help us move forward in other things. And then what do you notice about dehydration and the quality of our sleep?
Well, one of the symptoms of dehydration is actually fatigue. And so if you're not paying attention to how much you're drinking, it can be really easy to just kind of push that off to the side. And then you're tired and you don't really realize what's going on because you're tired and you're dehydrated, and it becomes cyclical. And so just adding something where it becomes a routine when you stop and take your break, if while you're stretching, you make a cup of tea and kind of bring that in together to create kind of a new habit. Although it's probably best to create that particular habit in stages, because, you know, if you start drinking a whole lot of water all at once, your body really doesn't handle it terribly well.
No. You won't have much desk time.
No. Especially not the first few days of doing that. So
exactly.
Adding that one gradually really helps.
Yeah. Anything in moderation. Yeah, great point. And then what about sleep? You know, I was just talking with someone who said sometimes her best ideas come at 3 a.m. or, you know, and I think as entrepreneurs, we can sometimes have not very good quality because we're worried or we're stressed or we're thinking that's when our ideas come and whatnot. So what would you advise, or what do you notice about the importance of sleep?
One of the things with sleep is pretty much everybody knows that we need to get enough sleep. But just because you're getting enough doesn't mean you're actually getting enough quality sleep. There was a study, and I wish I could remember where I got this from. I think it was published in Prevention Magazine about 6 years ago. But what they did, they took Olympic-level athletes, and they interrupted their sleep cycles in the same way the sleep cycle of a person with fibromyalgia gets interrupted. And within a week, they started having the same symptoms as fibromyalgia. And these are people who are in peak physical condition. And so, because what happens in fibromyalgia is you may or may not wake up fully, but you never really get into a deep sleep. And so your body's not really getting that full rest, that full time for repair. And so you think you're sleeping well, but then you still wake up. When you wake up, you're still fully exhausted. And it can be incredibly difficult because you really don't know what's going on and you have no way of knowing how to get out of it. But even for the average person, if the baby wakes you up and then the dog wakes you up and things like that, you can't necessarily get that recuperative sleep. But if it's your own ideas that are interfering, the best thing that I've found is to just keep a notepad by the bed. And if it's something that's actually, goes back to one of the things we talked about earlier, if it's causing you worry, write down 3 actions that you can do the next day. They don't have to be big, but something concrete so that you at least can acknowledge that you're making progress in that direction. Or if your best ideas come at 3 o'clock in the morning, then you've got a place to write them down so you don't have to keep track of them in your head.
Yeah. Right. Like keep that running list.
Yeah. It keeps that spinning in your brain and it makes it that much harder to let go and actually rest because you don't want to let those ideas go.
And I like the idea of the pad and paper behind, or a pen and paper next to the bed, because I don't know how many times I've woken up and had an idea or a flash of something. And I thought, oh, I'll remember that. Mm-hmm. And then I fall back to sleep. And then of course I'm like, what was that? And I never remember.
Yeah. A week later, you're still sitting there going, okay, I had an idea. I know I had an idea.
It was a brilliant $1 million idea.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yeah, that happens. So that's a great tip about, you know, being able to capture those so that number one, we don't lose them. And number two, they don't spin and keep us from getting that recuperative sleep. One of the things that I encounter is that I really love my work and it can exhaust me. So what's up with that? You know, why do things that energize us also often drain us?
That's one of those things that's actually true, both physical and non-physical stuff. It's kind of like if you love tennis, playing one game is great. Playing 6 games is going to knock you on your butt. And the same thing kind of happens with the things that we love where we're working on something. We're really into it. We're really enjoying it. And we're pushing and pushing. And we want to keep doing it because we enjoy it. But we've kind of reached that level where it's exhausting. It's like you kind of reach a wall. It's one of those things, I love to read. But after about 45 minutes, I kind of stop comprehending. You know, my eyes are still skimming the page, but I've gotten 3 pages down and I don't actually know what happened. And I think I got this from Chris Guillebeau, but I could be wrong on that. Most people work best in 45 to 90 minute chunks, maybe 2 hours. And this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with taking breaks. If when you get to whatever your stopping point is, and that's another one of those things where it's just a matter of developing awareness over it, if you'll stop and stretch, go walk around the block, just kind of go stand outside for a little while, that may be all the reset that you need. Or you may need to switch between different types of activities depending on, you know, what you've got on your plate that day.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up, and I didn't know the source of the 45-minute kind of tipping point of, you know, if you're focused on one thing for longer than that, then you start to lose your focus and lose your concentration and effectiveness. And my challenge was, and to some degree still is, that so I know that, but I get so absorbed in what I'm doing that 45 minutes comes and goes, And I probably am losing efficiency and effectiveness, but I'm still going. And so I thought, I need something to remind me. And one could use a timer, of course. And I also found this plug-in, I guess, or something that sits on my desktop called Big Stretch Reminder. I think that's what it is. Yeah, Big Stretch Reminder, and it's a pop-up. And you can program it to tell you what you want. So mine says, get up, stretch, leave the room, pet Lucy, you know, to remind myself, like, get up, move away from the computer. My challenge is not ignoring that, because that's what I find happens. So it's like, okay, great, I've got this reminder. And then sometimes I'm like, okay, wait, you know, I'm just going to work through it. And I've heard the power in it comes from, it doesn't matter if you're in the middle of a word that you're typing. When it's time, stand up, do something different, and then come back. Because I want to make sure that I maintain the energy for the things that I love to do. And speaking of that, how can we make sure that we're leaving energy for the other things? Like if we love our work or we're really into it, it can be sort of all-encompassing. So what about, you know, leaving time for those other 8 hours where you want to do sports or an artistic pursuit or reading, like you mentioned, or even, dare I say, socializing with other people? You know, how can we make sure we're not expending all of our energy in our work and leaving some for some fun, leaving some time for fun?
And again, the first thing on this is noticing, you know, noticing how much energy you have, noticing how much you're spending, just kind of seeing what affects you and when it affects you. So like Charlie Gilkey has a downloadable sheet that you can use to kind of heat map your day. When your energy's highest, when your energy's lowest, what kind of energy it is. So, like, I know for myself that between 3 and 6 o'clock in the afternoon, that is my lowest mental time. So that's when I do things that don't require any creativity. And so I'm still able to use my day, but I'm not trying to sit there and create things and work on things that need a whole lot of my focus because it's going to take me twice as long. Well, and once you've kind of got an idea of when your energy levels are higher and lower and what's most useful for you, then you can start adding like small amounts of things to your calendar. Like I'm about to, I think at the beginning of the month, I'm going to join a dance gym, which is something that I love. And my first inclination was, okay, I'm going to schedule a class every day of the week. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Let me know how that goes.
Well, okay, the scheduling part, that would happen.
Right.
But actually going through with it would probably end up happening once or twice a week at first. And so it makes more sense for me to actually schedule it once or twice a week at first so that I've actually got the emotional benefit of having accomplished what I intended to accomplish instead of being frustrated that I didn't do what was really too much to try and take on anyway.
Mm-hmm. Great point. Because I think we can think we're going to just jump wholeheartedly into something and then we're kind of setting ourselves up for failure when we do that. And that is absolutely draining.
Yeah.
Would you repeat what you said about the heat map? For the energy, did I hear you right?
Yeah. So Charlie Gilkey on ProductiveFlourishing.com has a post where he's got a download. I think it's a PDF file. And what it is, it's a pie chart broken up into 24 hours for the day. And so what you do is throughout the course of a week, map each day just kind of in chunks. So, you know, from the time you wake up, and about 5 hours later, stop there and just kind of fill in with like a colored pencil or whatever, what level you were at energetically, and then keep track of it in 4 or 5 hour chunks throughout the day. And you do that for about a week and then go through and see what the patterns are. And there's also space for keeping notes. So if you did something out of the ordinary that day, then you'll be able to look back and say, oh, well, this is why everything was shifted off by 2 hours.
That makes sense. Because I don't know about you, but I don't tend to have a typical week.
No, I don't have a typical week either, but I do have typical energy levels, which was really interesting to realize because even though I don't do anything the same way 2 days in a row, those levels are still where I can react to them. Like I have a friend who his most productive hours are between midnight and 3 o'clock in the morning. And that's actually apparently really true of creative extroverts, but he would never have known that. He just thought he was staying up late.
Yeah, it seems like this gives us another great piece of information that we can use instead of feeling like there's something wrong with us. Like, you know, staying up late or being a night owl or can't sleep and beating ourselves up for it and trying to conform when we should kind of go with the flow. Well, and that brings us to an interesting point that I think sometimes hangs us up is the difference between I have to do something and I get to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you like to point out for folks. And so can you say a little bit more about that and how we can make sure that we're balancing the have to's with the get to's?
Basically, every time you say you have to do something, that kind of adds a layer of stress to whatever the activity is anyway. And even when it's technically true, you know, I have to do the dishes because if I don't, I'm going to run out of dishes. That's, you know, kind of the way that happens. But I don't have to come at it with the this is drudgery that I need to take care of. You know, I can create a situation where I get, you know, I get to choose the music, I get to choose the lighting, I get to choose whether or not the soap I use is scented and what particular mood that puts me into. And so even something that is necessary, you have all of these options for making it a situation that you can look forward to.
So that's a great point. And I think I've noticed that, like, I'll look forward to doing something that is a have to a little bit more if there's an element of choice that I've mm-hmm. made within it.
Yeah, one of the questions that I'll ask myself a lot is, what would make this better? And it creates an entire shift in attitude because it's not just about taking care of the things that need to be taken care of, but it's about taking care of me as well.
And you were saying before about the stretching and having tea. For some people, stretching would be, you know, an absolute must. And other people might be like, oh, do I really have to stop what I'm doing to go do that? And so what I'm hearing is, you know, combining that, oh, I should or I have to, with, how can I make this better? I mean, I love that reframe that you just offered us.
Well, and, you know, I use the example of stretching because I know it makes such a difference for me. But if that's something that is just torture for somebody else, then, you know, there are so many different ways to schedule a break and reset. You know, anything in there would work. If you want to take 15 minutes and just go sit on the couch and read, you know, that will create that shift. And it's especially important in things like if you're having a problem with whatever you're working on, which it creates that inclination to push through. I need to figure out what this is. I need to get this done. I don't know what's going on. I have to fix this. Our focus tends to narrow further and further until we're so far deep inside the problem that we can't see the solution that's right there. And when I catch myself at that point, I immediately stand up, go into a different room, do something else, take 15, 20 minutes so that I can back out of that problem. It feels almost like a physical process, even though it isn't. But then when you come at it from a different angle, you're like, oh, well, that's all I needed to do.
Well, and I think of, you know, how we can stay, especially when we're in problem-solving mode, we can be very much in our left brain and be approaching something very linearly or logically. And sometimes the answer is in our right brain. And we can't get there unless we have that shift in perspective. Do you watch Grey's Anatomy? By any chance?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, last night they had a perfect example of this because one of the, you know, primary characters was trying to figure out how to approach a surgery that he'd never done before. And he kept trying and trying and trying on this model, you know, a mock-up kind of thing that he had. Well, then, you know, shift to another scene and he's out just hitting baseballs. And somebody comes along to coach him and says, oh, you know, it's not the way you're swinging the bat. It's the way you've got your head and your shoulders. And something in that shifted in him and said, oh, wait, I can change the, you know, I don't have to change the angle of the needle or the bat. I can change the angle of the head. And that will make the difference. And so it was only by getting out of that circumstance, you know, the actual problem that the solution came. And that happens so often. You know, speaking of things that are like structured and systems and all of that, you know, we can turn to all sorts of things to keep ourselves organized and productive. And I find that even just thinking about some of those systems wears me out because I have to, you know, it's one more layer of something that I have to create and monitor and sustain over time. I mean, like, I know there are a lot of folks that love the getting things done, that, and just like, you know, recycling back to the very beginning of our conversation, you know, the problem of not being organized often comes because we're not getting things done and we're constantly behind. And yet I can't bring myself to like pile on another system.
Yeah.
So what are some small ways that we can make a big difference in how we're showing up and how we're parsoning out our valuable energy?
Well, the first thing I want to say is actually, if the system is stressing you out, then it's not the right system for you.
Right.
Having read many books on organization and had a stack of them in a corner of a room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something that I've learned from personal experience. Most of those books are written by people for whom organization is an inherent skill. And if what they were writing worked for us, we would have figured it out already. Like, I have a friend who, it's Kirsten Simmons. She does productivity personality. And she says there are four personality types for productivity, which are actually distinctly related to organization. And she's got an opt-in quiz on her site that kind of tells you what your personality type is and gives you a little bit of inclination as to what direction to go in. Personally, I'm what she calls a combination of fantastical and environmental, which means I'm really creative, and if I can't see it in front of me, it might as well not exist. So, like, if I buy vegetables and put them in the crisper, the next time I see them, they will have liquefied because I'll just forget that they're in there. And so what I need to do is make sure that things are actually visible in front of me. So unless I'm actually done with something, it doesn't get filed. And the same with, like, organizing my kitchen. Everything's got to be something that I can see. Like, years ago, I went through and cleaned out my kitchen, and I found 4 bags of powdered sugar in various stages of use, because I don't use powdered sugar very often. And so I would think, oh, well, I need to go buy a bag for this recipe. And then turns out I had like 2 pounds of it.
Exactly. My powdered sugar is elbow macaroni.
Yeah. So what I did was I went through my kitchen and I said, okay, we're creating baskets. Sweeteners go in this basket so that I could pull the basket out, see what I had, put it back. And that for me really actually goes back to, once again, awareness, noticing, you know, noticing the things that you do over and over and over again, like buying powdered sugar or elbow macaroni. One of the things I used to do was, I still do it. It's just not a mess anymore. When I walk in the front door, I take my shoes off. I don't like wearing shoes in my house. And the door I used to go in my old house was in the kitchen. And so at the end of the week, I would have 5 pairs of shoes piled on my kitchen floor.
Mm-hmm.
Which, so many things wrong with that. And I finally realized that, you know, I was 30-some years old. I wasn't going to suddenly realize the need for walking back into my bedroom and putting my shoes away. And so instead what I did was I put a shoe rack in the little entryway in between that door and the kitchen. And that's where my most frequently used shoes live. And all of a sudden, my kitchen was cleaner. Because another thing that happens is, once you've got that first bit of clutter, it's that much easier to pile something else on top of it.
And then we stop seeing it, is what I've mm-hmm. noticed. It just sort of blends into the background, and it's just part of the texture.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate this point about kind of finding out what's your organizational or productivity or energy personality, and then finding ways to honor that rather than trying to impose someone else's system on top of it to make you change. Like you said, you know, okay, if I've been doing this for 30 some odd years or I'm this old, then am I suddenly going to learn shoes go in the closet, you know?
Yeah.
So kind of working with our quirks instead of against them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, and you mentioned this before, and this comes up with the social caterpillar and about stretching your comfort zone. And I know that's a favorite topic. So what's the relationship between managing our comfort or managing our energy and whether or not we're stretching our comfort zone?
The more energy you have, the more capable you feel of making the decisions that are going to help you stretch your comfort zone. And then, of course, the converse of that is the more exhausted you are, the more likely you are to stick to what you know. And both of those things are fine. If you're having a really exhausted, awful day, that's not the day to try something new. That's the day to take comfort in what you know. And that's perfectly fine. At the same time, if there's something specific that you want to change, picking a day when you know you're going to have more time and more energy is going to make it that much easier for you. I went through a period when I first moved here that I had worked myself up into a position where I found the very idea of getting on a public bus hugely stressful. Austin has a great bus system, and it wasn't something that was actually difficult. But what I had done was I was sitting there thinking, okay, so I want to ride the bus. Well, how do I know which bus I need to take? And once I'm on the bus, how do I know where my stop is? Because it's not like I know this town very well. And, you know, if I miss my stop, then what do I do after that? And so I was going through this entire series of stuff where I was predicting what would go wrong. And so on the one level, it was getting me really worked up. But on the secondary level, it was actually giving me a list of things that I could take a look at and figure out concrete answers to. And once I had taken a look at that and said, okay, well, this is the absolute worst thing that can happen here. What can I do to fix that? Once I had that list, I took a Sunday afternoon and said, okay, today is my bus adventure day. This is what I want to do. I'm going to see what happens. And so I was actually able to lower that stress level by treating it like an experiment so that I wasn't just creating more stress for myself, because that stress was then draining my energy and making it that much harder to do what I wanted to do. Because for me, my first reaction when I'm elevating my stress levels is, oh, I'm going to go make a cup of tea, which is a good response in that, you know, I'm taking care of myself, but it tends to stop there. And so it becomes kind of an out instead of creating a situation where, okay, once I've made the tea, I've lowered my stress level, I can take a look at this again. And so it's kind of finding the harmony between taking care of myself and just looking at what I need to do, not even necessarily doing anything about it at that point.
Just maybe it sounds like, you know, for you, having that cup of tea maybe allows you to take a step back and breathe and just be able to look at it a little bit more objectively.
Yeah.
And you're reminding us, too, that when there's something that's stressful, you know, it doesn't have to paralyze us, that we can use that as information and say, okay, so all these questions or these fears or assumptions that I have coming up, that's actually really valuable for me to know, because that's pointing me in the direction of, if I find out these things, you know, for what information is available, if I can find out these things, then I'll increase my comfort level, even while I'm stretching. Like, we don't realize we can make it a little bit more comfortable to stretch sometimes by listening to that and doing a sort of experiment or a dress rehearsal like you did. So any other advice or insights that you've learned about stretching your comfort zone that you want to share before we move to close our time together?
Mostly it's really just about paying attention to what you need. It comes down to being aware of yourself and how you act and how you react, and using that information to take care of yourself instead of beat up on yourself.
Own who you are.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing all of that wonderful, your insights and your own journey and noticings about yourself. That's so valuable. And you do end up hearing something and you say, oh, yeah, I'm not alone in that. That's very affirming and energizing as well. I have a question that I like to end all of my podcast conversations with. And it's a very introverty question. So if you were granted a year's vacation on Introvert Island and you could only take 3 books with you, what would you take with you and why?
The first one I would take is Job, A Comedy of Justice. It's by Robert Heinlein. I've probably read it 15 times already, and it's, for me, it's a really good example of the same person never reads the same book twice. You know, I always get something else out of it.
Yeah, brilliant. Can you repeat the title of it again?
Job, A Comedy of Justice. It's by Robert Heinlein.
Great. Thank you. And then what else would you take?
I think the next one I would take is probably The Introvert Advantage. It's by Marty Olson Laney. And mostly I think there's just so much information in that that it's worth reading a few times to kind of come at it from different angles.
Sure. Like you said, you're a different person each time.
Yeah.
And lastly, what would be your third pick?
The last one is kind of a cheat.
Uh-oh. Is it like three in one?
No, it's worse than that. It's I would probably end up taking The Collected Works of Shakespeare. You can get it bound. It's about 5 inches across.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, that way you just never run out of something to read.
No, absolutely not. You've got everything you need right there in terms of comedy and drama and mystery and intrigue.
Well, and it's so perfectly structured to play out the movie in your head.
Yep, absolutely. Well, you can always use it as a footstool if you need to grab a coconut.
Yes.
Once you finish, it can do double duty. Oh, well, Catherine, how can people learn more about you and what you have to offer?
Well, they are more than welcome to come by the site. It's thesocialcaterpillar.com. Or they can always catch me on Twitter. I'm at Catherine, KATHRYNT, Hunter.
Perfect. And do you have a Facebook presence?
So it's facebook.com/thesocialcaterpillar.
Well, thank you, Catherine, so much for sharing yourself with us and sharing your experience and your wisdom, and especially also for giving us some perspective on that trip that you took that caused you to have some shifts in the way you were looking at things and especially how you looked at yourself. So thank you so much for your generous sharing of your time and energy today.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
I hope that conversation inspired you to start thinking about ways you can stretch and grow in the new year. Take a moment and consider Catherine's advice, and take a few minutes right now to answer this question for yourself. What's one small thing I can do in the next few days to move myself forward towards my most important goal? Take a moment to write it down, write down that action step, attach a due date to it, and decide your next step. And if you're like me and you have an accountability partner, perhaps share that with your accountability partner so that someone else outside you knows about it and can help you and support you in making it happen. And if you do this and you keep doing it consistently, before you know it, you're going to be well on your way. There's a thought that always inspires me and puts things into perspective that comes from St. Francis. He says, "Start by doing what's necessary, then do what's possible, and suddenly you are doing the impossible." So thank you so much for listening to the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast. You can learn more about my coaching, speaking, and training services at www.theintrovertentrepreneur.com. If there's any way I can support you in your journey, please let me know. Have a wonderful week, and I look forward to seeing you next time.